Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hello, friends, and welcome back to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show. Today, I've got a show for you that's just me. I am going to be talking to you about a couple of things, but mainly about Nurse Practitioner Week. You all know I'm a nurse practitioner. They announce that every single time in the opening of my show. And I'm going to talk about the unique perspective that gives me as a parent. Now, today, we'll be doing a little bit of a deep dive into my book that I've written, Behind Closed Doors, a guide for parents and teens to navigate through life's toughest issues. Now, it's not just for teens, but it is for all parents at all stages, because if you're parenting littles, then great, you are way ahead of the curve. And I'm telling you, one of the things that I've learned personally as a parent and as a healthcare provider is that parenting is so much about looking at ourselves and nurturing our own emotional and spiritual and physical health and growth. And that really has such vicarious benefits for our kids. So we have to look at both ourselves and our kids. And I'll be talking a little bit about the perspective that gives me to help parents find hope for healthy relationships. So before this is over, I'll be giving you 7 starter steps. If you're feeling discouraged in your walk as a parent, if you're feeling like, oh my goodness, I'm doing all of this wrong, am I messing up my kids? Or you're just feeling like, am I doing this right? Stay tuned, because I am going to end the show by giving you 7 starter steps to reset your family culture and your relationships with your kids. Well, let me start by telling you a little bit about nurse practitioners. It is Nurse Practitioner Week this week, and so happy Nurse Practitioner Week to all of my fellow NP colleagues out there who are listening. Now, I am a registered nurse and have been for 25 years, and I've been an NP for about 20 now. Now, a nurse practitioner is basically a registered nurse with a graduate level degree of education. A lot of nurse practitioners have master's degrees, and we're moving now to transition that to a doctoral degree, which is what I have. My degree is a doctor of nursing practice. So yes, that's where the Dr. Nurse Mama comes from, and also my role as a professor. Now, NPs get additional training and skills and experience to do things beyond what we could do as registered nurses. But really, one of the biggest difference for NPs is the philosophy with which we provide care. We focus on disease prevention and wellness and health promotion and living a healthy lifestyle. So it's not just about fixing things that go wrong. We want things to not go wrong in the first place. And we're just a little open-minded in what we accept as therapy. So for example, depression, we are very likely to prescribe sunshine and maybe a puppy and some hugs from friends and more community, because we recognize that spiritual, emotional, physical, and mental health all are intertwined, and they all impact each other. And we know that when you experience mental health concerns, those can present as physical problems. And, you know, so often I see patients in my practice who have headaches, or they're tired, or they have stomach aches or joint pains. And many of those just relate to the stressors of everyday life, because that's a concept called somatization, where we process mental trauma through our physical bodies. And so that is just the kind of framework that we look at as nurse practitioners. So you'll see NPs all across the care setting. You'll see them in clinics, in hospitals, in emergency rooms, in urgent cares, in nursing homes, colleges, camps, and all over the place. And we do a lot of things like, you know, of course, we're going to take your history and do an exam and maybe order some tests and prescribe medication and those kinds of things. But again, that real difference is just the heart of nursing and who we are. Now, there's all kinds of different nurse practitioners. I'm a pediatric nurse practitioner, but we have psychiatric and mental health NPs. We've got family practice NPs. We've got neonatal NPs, acute care NPs who might be in a setting like the intensive care unit, emergency NPs, adult gerontology NPs, women's health, and all kinds of other specialties. So I just really appreciate, I love being an NP. I love meeting families where they are and helping them to look at their health from a holistic lens. Now, that really gave me a unique perspective to write a parenting book. When I look at parenting books, I see a lot of psychologists. I see a lot of moms who are just really great at what they do and have a lot of wise advice. But, you know, I did not see a lot of nursing authors. Now, nursing, I will take a moment to brag on my profession here. It is the most trusted profession, ranked every year by the American public through Gallup, and it's not even close to second place. The only year that we have been taken off that top position was actually 2001, when firefighters, rightly so, in the wake of 9/11, got that honor. But we know that if you cut your finger, or if you have some symptoms that you don't know about, or if you have a weird rash, you're going to usually call your nurse friends. I know one day I was standing in church with a friend who had come to visit me out of town, and she saw this big crowd of people waiting to talk to me, and she said, "Oh my goodness, this is so great. You have so many friends." And I said, "Friends, these are just people who want to ask me questions about their kids' rashes while they're in the nursery." But we love, as nurses, we love serving our communities. Now, when I started looking at parenting and I started to write my book, Behind Closed Doors, I realized that I wanted to give you three perspectives in the three planes of who I am. So what I did was I looked at the top 12 things that I am seeing in pediatric clinical practice. Now, I'm not talking about ear infections or colds or stomach bugs, although of course I still see those. I'm talking about the ways that pediatric practice has fundamentally changed. I mean, I almost don't even recognize the things that I'm seeing and talking about, the way that my practice looked when I started 20 years ago and I was seeing chickenpox, and now almost no kids get chickenpox, and now we're seeing things like mental health and social media and cyberbullying and sexting and pornography and divorce and eating disorders and all kinds of things that are very concerning to parents. I realized that I needed to give this perspective. So in each chapter, I walk you through behind three doors. Now, the first door is behind the clinic door, where I give you my clinical perspective, because it is on the minds of parents everywhere. How in the world does a kid who is sexting, for example, end up in my clinic? Well, I can tell you that it doesn't ever say on my appointment schedule, "Oh, parents are concerned that their child is sexting and may be depressed." It never says that. It says things like worried about their blood sugar, or sleeping a lot, or having a lot of headaches. Again, these are symptoms of mental or emotional trauma that eventually will start to process themselves through your physical body. And it's because I see this a lot that I know to ask about it. And my role is to help uncover that, to recognize it, and to position the family to be able to pursue healing in a way that is quick, because I really do want early recognition before great harm has occurred, and to promote conversation between parents and their kids. Most of the time, I find that parents really want to talk to their kids about these things. They want to do the right thing, but sometimes they just don't know what that is. And a lot of times, even myself included, we don't have a lot of confidence that even if we know what to say, that we're saying get well. And that can be really, really hard. The other thing that I wanted to do in that behind the clinic door section is really destigmatize what is going on. Now, I know there's a lot of angst and a lot of anxiety right now and a lot of tension between the medical community and parents. And I want you to know that pediatrics still has a very family-centered care focus. That is one of the core tenets of what we learn. And it's so important for you to find a healthcare provider that you trust with your life, literally. And more importantly, that you like, that you get along with, that shares your worldview. That is going to make so many of your decisions easier. And it can take time and patience to find that right healthcare provider. But if you do, knowing that you can trust their opinion will ease your mind and help you sleep a lot better at night. So in Behind the Clinic Door, I share real stories from my patients' practice of real patients with real families, real needs in real time, who I have encountered and how that presents, so that you can see kind of where that comes. And usually it's later in presenting with a concern. And I want you to know what's going to happen if you come, what kind of questions you can be expected to be asked, what are your rights as parents, what are they going to say if they want to talk to your kid alone, and what do you do if you're not comfortable with that? Those are all things that we can talk about. The second section is behind the home door. What I really want to do is help parents translate that clinical advice that we're giving them. But it's really hard because I may give you some stellar advice, but really, realistically, we're talking for 10 minutes in a clinic setting. Unless you take that home and partner maybe your healthcare provider's expertise in pediatrics with, most importantly, your expertise in your child as a parent, then that's going to be lost in translation. And sometimes it can be really hard to, where do we start? What do we do? So that's the home strategies part. How do we translate what we learned in the clinic to promoting health at home? That third section, the third door, is behind the heart door. Now, when we look at things that our kids are facing today, it's easy to take a stance like we just want to be an ostrich. We want to bury our head in the sand. We want to, you know, live on a commune and cut off the internet and just live off the land, right? Like, I think that thought has passed through every parent. We just want to cut that digital tether and just block out the world. But that's just not realistic. And so I think when we look at what the world is throwing at our kids, it can be really discouraging and really, frankly, depressing when we look at it. But I want you to know that there is hope to be found. There is hope for healthy families. It absolutely can happen. You can parent your child confidently and establish that connection in a complicated world. So often as parents, I think we want to fix whatever our kids are facing. And again, that's just not realistic. But at the same time, we undervalue and underappreciate the importance of connection and the importance of just being with them as they encounter something that's difficult. That builds resilience. So if you imagine when your child encounters something stressful, something harmful, something that you wish hadn't happened, that you wish you could prevent, it turns on a faucet of stress chemicals and bathes their brain in this toxic bath of stress chemicals. But this, listen to this. This is so important. As a parent, when you sit beside them, when you put your arm around them, when you give them a hug, when you tell them, I'm here, I care, what that does is immediately turns off the faucet of chemicals in their brain and gives them resilience to go forward. That is so powerful. So what you're doing matters. That moment matters. Now don't go away, because when you come back, I'm going to give you some parenting tips and we'll work our way to those 7 steps to resetting your parenting strategy. I'll see you on the other side of this break.
You're listening to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show with Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hey, friends, welcome back. We are celebrating Nurse Practitioner Week. Happy NP Week to all of my colleagues out there who are helping to take care of holistically healthy families. I just love it. And today we're talking about Behind Closed Doors, a guide to help parents navigate through life's toughest issues, which is the book I wrote with my nurse practitioner perspective, but also my perspective as a professor looking at research and as a mom who has been there in the trenches, who has felt like I am messing things up. Now, if you've read my book or if you've heard me talk before, you know that the opening scene of Behind Closed Doors has my oldest daughter, at the time she was 13, and me driving down the road having a recurrent argument. It seems like when she turned 13, there were 13 moods in 13 minutes, and I could not keep up. I felt like a failure. And as we're driving down the road, she threw a book at my head. And it really is kind of funny to look back and to see that God is the author of such miraculous stories, because that book that she threw at my head became a book now that I've put out into the world and sharing my experience. Now, one of the first things that you need to know about parenting is that who you are and how you were raised really matters. And it really influences the way that you parent your kids. Now, there's some things that are great. There's some traditions that are just so rich and so meaningful. And there are some legacies of faith and strong character that will definitely be carried forward. And there are some of you listening who were just raised in the most amazing, most loving families. And if that is you, then I would encourage you to be grateful for that. It is really not that common. Most people have experienced some sort of hurt or trauma along the way. Some of it was unintentional. Some of it was death that was unavoidable. And some of it was intentional. Some of it was abuse, whether emotional abuse or physical abuse or harm. And we have to intentionally unlearn and relearn patterns of negative relationships. It's not enough just to remove that offending influence. It's not enough just to block off that toxic relationship. It's not enough just to remove yourself from substances or alcohol and not using those. Those ingrained unhealthy patterns of relationship still remain. So you have to unlearn and relearn those things. And if you don't, this is such a hard truth, but if you don't, your past hurts, your past burdens, your past struggles, they will become your children's present hurts, their present burdens, and their present struggles. And if you don't deal with it in a meaningful way, your kids will. So the most important thing that you can do to help your kids is to seek your own personal healing journey. So if there are things in your past that you just have not addressed, that you've just locked away in a box somewhere, now is the time, friends. Now is the time to deal with that and to look at that, because this is generational trauma. When we have that stress and that trauma, it actually literally changes the way that our DNA is read and transcribed. And we pass on that unhealthy DNA translation to our kids. But here's the hope. The opposite is true. When we seek healing, we pass that DNA along to our kids and our grandkids and our great-grandkids. But it can be really hard. Now, when you first start out in those early parenting years, those days are physically exhausting. I mean, you are changing diapers, you are up in the night, you are feeding, bathing, literally caring for the needs, and you are keeping your children alive. And they seem to be always on you. Like, no matter where you are, they follow you around, they climb on you. And anytime you try to have a moment's peace, like you are going to get, if you're even fortunate enough to close the bathroom door, you'll get a note passed under the bathroom door. But at the same time, parents are so admired in that stage. The world revolves around you. You are their singular source of safety. You are their teacher. You are their sun, moon, and stars. You are respected. And most of all, you are invited. Kids are constantly saying at that age, "Mommy, watch me. Daddy, watch me." And heaven forbid you avert your eyes for a single moment. They want you to play pretend store with them, or to play dress up, or to have tea parties, or to throw the ball. And we are wanted. But sometimes it can be hard, because that's seen as a burden, because we're so exhausted trying to put food on the table and keep a roof over their heads and, you know, somehow be humans ourselves. And this can be the struggle. What happens is, as our kids grow up and they developmentally start to separate from us, we can resent that. And then what happens is we start to unintentionally convey to our kids that we love a younger version of who they used to be more than who they are becoming. This is how we do it. We say, "Oh, look at this picture when you were so cute, when you were so little. Oh, you used to love me, but you don't love me anymore." And that can be really, really sad for them. And that's more about you, honestly, than it is about them. And that's a really tough thing. Kids desperately need their parents to intentionally invest in relationship building, initiating difficult conversations with confidence and grace while sparing their dignity. So this is hard, because we kind of just expect things to happen. But unless we're intentional about our parenting journey, it's not going to happen well. It's not going to happen like we want it to. What we need to realize is that our kids, their minds are like a police scanner, and they are developmentally wired to listen to everything that we have to say, every word that we have to say, and they especially attune in when we talk about them. Now, I challenge you to think during the day about how often you talk about your kids. You may just offhandedly express frustration to a grocery store clerk or to your family member that you're talking to on the phone. And sometimes, especially when they get to that teenage, we think, "They won't talk to me." Well, leverage the fact that they are listening to you, even when it doesn't seem like it, and use that opportunity to say good things about them. Speak kindly, speak favorably about them, to have compliments, especially when they get to those teen years. You know, often I had four teens at once. And as soon as I say that, usually if it's a crowd, there's a collective, "Ooh," or if I'm talking one-on-one, people will say, "Oh my gosh," and they'll make a joke, because we do use humor to hide pain, or they'll maybe instantly start prayers for me or condolences. And my kids are watching this and seeing how I respond. So I started to have a ready response. When people would say something negative about raising teens, I'd say, "You know what my favorite thing about raising teens is?" And I would say something positive at that moment, because I knew that my kids were listening and I didn't want them to feel like a burden or a struggle. Now, it's really important too, sometimes when we're in those seasons of struggle, when they're young, if they are just, you know, not eating their vegetables, or their room is a perpetual train wreck, or they're constantly throwing temper tantrums in public, all the way up to the teen years when, oh gosh, maybe they are constantly throwing temper tantrums in public, or their room isn't clean, or they're not eating healthy foods. It's amazing how much there are parallels between toddlers and teenagers, by the way. But one thing that we can do as parents is not let a singular behavioral struggle define the totality of their character. Now, what do I mean by that? What I mean by that is, say your child is struggling with cleaning their room. It just always looks like a bomb went off in there. when you go in there, there's a difference between saying, why are you always so messy? Why do you always have to give me such a hard time? Why can't you get this right? And we start using really shame-based conversation, shame-based messages. That's taking one singular struggle of trying to keep their room clean and making it into a character trait. They're lazy, they're messy, and they're disrespectful. That's a really powerful thing because guilt tells us what we did was wrong. If we're having something that we're struggling with in a matter of obedience, guilt is a good thing. It's a signal to our brain to change our behavior. But shame tells us that who we are is wrong. And so I encourage you, if you're in that season of struggle, to think about what kinds of messages are you giving around that. So saying, why are you always so lazy and why can't you ever clean your room is much different than saying, it's clear that the strategy you have right here is not working for keeping your room clean. Let's talk about a plan to hold you accountable and set you up for success. What can I do to help you be successful in cleaning your room? That is a completely different message. The other thing we need to do is stop treating developmentally normal behavior like it's a character flaw or a moral failing. So for example, in the middle childhood years, those kids are wired to think about law and justice. Their thinking is very concrete. Everything is right or is wrong. And so sometimes when they know they're going to get in trouble for doing something wrong, they'll lie because they're afraid of the consequences. They know this is going to happen, so I better lie so that won't happen. And then all of a sudden, it's like, oh, my kid is a liar. Great. Is my kid a psychopath? Like, is my kid going to, you know, what am I doing wrong? But just recognizing that sometimes those are just developmentally normal behaviors that need to be coached and shaped and framed. And that can be really hard. And as they get older, sometimes the speed at which they make decisions is really a failure of decision making, not a failure of their morals. So when we're speaking to our children, we need to speak to them as if they're the wisest, kindest, bravest people that we know, because what we believe and what we speak about them, they will become. It is such a myth that kids don't listen to their parents or they don't care about what their parents say. The opposite is actually true. They care very, very, very much, and they believe what we believe about them. And this can be really hard because many times we expect our kids to give us instant gratification because we have anxiety as parents. Are we doing this right or are we doing this wrong? And we expect their behavior to give us that feedback loop to say, okay, well, if my kid is doing the right thing, I must be a good parent. But that's a lot of pressure, and it is not our kids' purpose in life to validate our parenting choices. That can be really hard. We have to accept that there are some things that will take a long time to struggle with. And parents, let's turn the mirror back on us. How many of us have things that we are struggling with? Right now, I am struggling to keep my life organized, and I am failing absolutely miserably. But my husband, bless his heart, is so gracious to me. He recognizes my struggle and he meets me there. And instead of judging me for it, he just tries to support me and tries to encourage me. And that makes all the difference in the world. Now, when we're doing this parenting thing, we adopt different parenting styles for us to feel like we have some control. Sometimes that's like a helicopter parent. We hover over everything our kids do because we don't want them to do anything that's going to make us anxious or uncomfortable or feel like a failure. And so we're going to micromanage those choices before they occur. Some parents are like a lawnmower. They're just going to keep everything clean and manicured and just landscaped perfectly so that our kids can live in the perfect little room, in the perfect little world, and just not have to encounter things that are messy or difficult. Some parents are like a bulldozer. They're going to knock down every obstacle that comes their way. And what I hear a lot now is about parents being a gatekeeper, protecting your kids from negative influences. And that is so important. I've talked about this before. That is a defensive strategy, which is necessary and good in some circumstances, but it cannot be your only strategy. The world will encounter your kids. The world will influence your kids, especially living at the speed of a smartphone. It doesn't matter if your kids don't have that. Again, unless you are living off the grid and you wouldn't be hearing this show, your kids are going to encounter challenges. So what they need is that transition when they're young. We're a teacher. We teach them how to do everything. And then we transition to becoming a coach, a good, tough coach who makes sure that the practice environment is safe, who makes sure that we're going to push them when they need to be pushed, who are going to have them rest when they need to rest, who will create a training plan, who will celebrate their victories, who will learn from their defeats. And we can find hope in this, because I'll tell you, you can't leverage your way. You can't lecture your way. You cannot lecture your way to leverage behavioral change. And you cannot argue your way into a right relationship. If you want to influence your child's worldview, you've got to start by viewing the world as they see it and meet them where they are. We have to be their guide on the side and walk them through each step with patience and grace and courage, creating a safe space in an unsafe world where our kids are comfortable coming to us as the experts, asking uncomfortable questions in a comfortable way. And that's how we find hope for healthy relationships. When we come back, I'm going to give you 7 starter steps to reset your parenting strategy. I'll see you in a minute.
Podcasts of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hey, friends, we are talking about Nurse Practitioner Week and my perspective as a professor, as a pediatric nurse practitioner, and as a mom of 4. My kids are now, I have a young adult and I have 3 teenagers still. And so I am right in the thick of this parenting thing. I have learned a lot and I still have a lot to go. Now, everywhere I go, a very common question that I get is, am I ruining my kids for life? Like, am I doing this parenting thing all wrong? Am I scarring them? And are they one day going to be on a therapist couch telling how it all started with my mom? I think this is a common fear for parents, but we really have to parent with confidence and know that we are going to make mistakes. Kids do not need a perfect parent, because newsflash, no such one exists. The only perfect parent is God, our Father, who has imperfect children. And even us with a perfect Father and God, we are imperfect children. So how much more so are our children going to be imperfect when they have imperfect parents? And in this world, this day and age of social media, it's very easy to fall into the trap of feeling like you have to be that perfect parent. But parents, there is grace, there is forgiveness, there is unlearning and relearning new ways forward. And if you set that tone in your home that I'm going to mess up and I will apologize and make it better, and you're going to mess up and you're going to apologize and make it better, then that is the way to find hope for healthy families. Now, I've told you from the top of the hour, from the beginning of the show, that I was going to give you 7 starter steps for healthy relationship building and 7 ways to reset your parenting strategy. So if you feel like you're in a parenting rut, if you feel like, you know, you are just on the struggle bus, then I am going to help you and give you 7 things that you can think about. The first one is creating a safe space in your home. Now, I want you to picture your house and think, where are you physically present with your kids? Do you have a place where you're physically present? Are you together physically a lot? Like, are you sitting on the couch together, or is everybody just kind of in their room doing their own thing? I'll give you some examples from my house, and then you can think of some for yours. For example, in my office, I work from home. That's my personal situation. I have a chair that is right next to my desk. It's called the counseling chair. That's what my kids have dubbed it. And they know that the invitation is open at any time and any way for them just to come and sit. There's a little table, so sometimes they'll just sit and not do anything. Sometimes they'll sit and have some phone time. Sometimes they'll work on their homework, or sometimes I'll need to clue in and to pay attention that they're trying to get my attention. There's something they want to talk about, but I need to initiate. Now, sometimes when we say, hey, what's going on, or how was your day? You get back, fine, my day was fine. Well, what was fine about it? What do you mean, what was fine about it? Like, what do you want? But I want you to think about this. If your kid is in a difficult season, and it just seems like there's challenges and there's struggles, and then all of a sudden, they come up to you and they're like, hey, how was your day, Mom? What's going on? What is the question that every parent everywhere asks? What do you want? What do you want? Do you need money? Did you do something terrible? What is going on? Now, parents, our kids have that same feeling, especially our teens. If we've been on a season of where we're griping, where we're disciplining a lot, and then all of a sudden we're, oh, hey, I want to talk to you. They think that's, okay, gosh, my kids are going to cringe here, but I'll say that's sus, right? That's what they would say. That's what your teen would say in Gen Z. That's suspicious. So I want you to think about, where is that physical space in your home? Do you have a bar stool pulled up to the kitchen so they can sit while you're cooking? Or is there a place in the living room where you're making yourself physically present? Is there a welcome chair that they can have in that you have in their bedroom to go and sit and talk with them? All right, that's number one. Number two, create some family rhythms. Now, there are 3 parenting practices you had while you were parenting toddlers that you should still be doing when you're parenting teens. So whether you have teens or toddlers or anywhere in between, these 3 things will help you create some rhythms. What does bedtime look like in your house? Now, it may not always happen at the same time, but again, doesn't matter if they're teens or toddlers. Having some rhythm at bedtime, some ritual to say goodnight, whether that's reading a story or just tucking them in or sitting to talk for a little bit. I know with my kids, they don't have much to say when I pick them up from school, but when I sit on the edge of their bed at night, they will read me the War and Peace version of their day. Sometimes it's to avoid bedtime, but take advantage of that. Number 2 is snacks or meals. Having at least 3 family meals together a week really improves health outcomes. We're talking about better school performance, less risk-taking behaviors, all kinds of health benefits. Now, this does not have to be candlelight and jazz music and gourmet meals, okay? In my house, a lot of times this looks like peanut butter and jelly passed around the kitchen island, sometimes barbarically, like with no paper towels, no paper plates. It's like we are just eating and then we're heading out to soccer. And that's okay, but we're still saying, what were the highs and lows and where did you go? And tell me about your day. The 3rd thing is schedule. Looking at your schedule and helping your kids schedule appropriately. Because a lot of times what happens with stress is you don't have enough time to meet a deadline, to do a homework assignment, or to do everything that you need to do. And then that stress bubbles over. So look at your schedule. Where do you need more space? Where do you need to give the gift of no? Just say, no, we can't do that. All right, so we've talked about creating safe space, creating family rhythms. Number 3, cultivate confidence. I want you to think right now about your youngest child. I'll say that because my youngest child constantly teases his older siblings that he is my favorite, but you know, that just goes along with the stereotype of the youngest, right? But think about the youngest child. What is their greatest strength they bring to your family? Now, if you can't think of the answer in just that long that I took to pause, guess what? Neither can they. Kids need to know how they serve the family and how they can step forward in times of stress. Now, my oldest daughter is amazing at hospitality. So if someone's had a bad day, you might find a chocolate on your pillow and your bed made like it is a 5-star hotel with a little note. Those things make such a difference. My youngest, again, talking about my youngest, I know if he's listening, he's going to say, "See, guys, I am mom's favorite." But he's hilarious. He brings humor to diffuse a difficult situation. So sometimes he'll put on a comedy show, which is great. I want you to think about each of your children now. And what is their greatest strength? And how can you call that out and help them feel compelled and confident to serve? Number 4, creating a safe escape when emotions overwhelm them. So when you see them starting to get frustrated, where is that safe space that they can go? If they're younger, that's going to be having a timeout, having some minutes in their room, just saying, "Hey, it looks like you could use some time and space just to calm down and collect yourself." And say that kindly. Where is that? Do you have a little space that you could create in your home for such as that? Are there maybe sensory toys there if your kids are younger? Or is there a place to charge their phone or to listen to music or to have some special snacks? Where is a space that they can go to decompress? Is that a swing outside? And make it clear. Just say, "Hey, I think you need to take a minute," and or go ahead and feel free and take a minute. Step away from your chores. Step away from whatever it is, giving them a freedom for a safe escape before the conflict becomes too great. Number 5, anticipate the unexpected. Know that they're going to be roadblocks, and instead of feeling discouraged and defeated by them, feel unsurprised. Expect them. Welcome them as an opportunity. Reset your expectations. Reframe your expectations to know that if you're working on something, there will be setbacks. There will be mistakes. Now, in one of my earlier shows, I talked all about anticipating the unexpected and recognizing that we have to, as parents, drop the "not my child" mantra and recognize that anything can happen to any of our kids. So saying, when they make a mistake, saying instead of "I told you so," or "I can't believe you did that," or using "what were you thinking" language that's really not helpful, you should practice this one response. "I'm so sorry this happened. I'm sorry this happened." Whether that's a temper tantrum or a poor choice that they make, just saying, "I'm sorry this happened." Let's let our emotions settle down before we talk. "But no matter what, I love you no matter what." And telling your kids, "You can always come to me with anything." It's so important to continue to give that invitation. They need to hear it over and over and over again. And each time you say it, and each time you respond in love and not anger, you're building a building block of trust in that relationship where they know that no matter what they face, they can come to you with life's toughest issues. Now, number 6 is be generous. Shift your mindset to parent for the long game. Release your child from the pressure of your expectations of response. Be generous with your time. That is your most valuable commodity. That is the thing that your kids want most of all. Yes, even those teenage years when it seems like they don't. So again, sometimes as parents, we fall into this trap of instant gratification. We think we're having trouble with our teens, but we think, "Okay, I'm going to plan this amazing event for them. I'm going to put a lot of effort into it. I'm going to, you know, spend a lot of money and have a lot of time." And they just kind of respond with a shoulder shrug and a meh. And they're like, "Okay, this is weird." And it's so crushing to us. And we think, why wasn't that an instant fix? Well, because we have to be the parents and we have to keep initiating and we have to keep trying and building trust. So sometimes when our kids experience a problem, if we're honest, we treat ourselves like we're some online virtual assistant. You know, we're just kind of hovering in the background. We expect our kids to kind of play independently, let mommy get stuff done, right? And then they come to us with a problem and they say, imagine this virtual assistant opening. Okay, here's the problem. And then we say, okay, here's the solution. Can you please implement this and let this problem go away? And can you take a survey about my service, by the way, and tell me I'm a great mom? But it doesn't really happen that way in real life. Our kids still continue to struggle. And we have to remember that we don't learn to tie our shoes the first time we try. We don't learn to ride a bike, most of us, the very first time we try. These things take practice and they take patience. And our kids can easily feel discouraged and feel like failures. But they need to see the confidence in our eyes that the seeds that we're planting will come to fruition, that will come to be one day, and they will overcome that struggle. They will accomplish that skill. They will not feel that character struggle that they feel anymore. Because parenting, we treat it like growing a chia pet. I mean, it's like all of a sudden we want to just do a little water, a little sunlight, like a little advice, a little bit of time, and then the next day, everything's good, right? But in reality, parenting is like growing a pineapple. I'll never forget the first time I went to a pineapple field, and all I saw was fields and fields of brown dirt, and I learned that it takes a pineapple about 2 years to grow, and yet the workers are still out there. They're still tending the pineapple fields because they know that harvest is coming. Parents, we have to know that planting and harvesting do not happen in the same season, and we have to be patient and confident in the seeds that we are planting. Now, step number 7, this is the last one and the most important one. And not too long ago, I did an event for parents and teens in the community. And I asked them at the teens as they walked in, what is the one thing you want from your parents that you're afraid to ask for? And I had post-it notes all over the table. And I couldn't wait to see what they were going to say. And as I looked at that table, one word was written over and over and over again on every post-it note on that table. And that word, my friends, was listen. Kids want us to listen. And we have to listen with our face. Many times we say, I'm listening, I hear. And then we immediately parrot back to them everything that they've just said, just to prove that we were right. But sometimes you have to ask, do you want to be right? Or do you want to be in right relationship? Listen with your face. Well, these are 7 starter steps to reset your parenting strategy. I hope you'll join us next time. We'll continue this conversation as we learn and grow as parents together. I'm in it for the long haul, and I'm glad to have you with me. I'll see you next time.